Hey everyone, welcome to the Pot Awareness Podcast, and thanks for joining me. This podcast is specifically for about educating and raising awareness for animals and rescues and organizations across the United States and world. It really goes a long way towards this mission when our listeners rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and all of our other podcast platforms. Also, be sure to check us out on our official website at pawawareness.org and on social media at TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at pawawareness_podcast. You can check us out for all of our latest bits and clips of our podcast, as well as Pet of the Week and Pet of the Month. If you're listening and involved with an animal rescue organization or have a story of your own that you want to share, reach out to us at info@pawawareness.org and we can get you on the podcast. Thanks for watching, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of the Paw Awareness Podcast. Today I'm talking with Julie Restvovic, Volunteer Coordinator and Director of Community Outreach at the Wimberley Adoption Group and Rescue. I want to thank you so much for coming on, and I just want to go ahead and pass it over to you. Go ahead and introduce yourself as well as the organization and what you guys do.
Sure. So as you said, my name is Julie Restvovic. I'm the Volunteer Coordinator and Community Outreach Director. I've been with WAG for 11 years, and it's been in existence since 12. It started as a need. We're about an hour outside of Austin, Texas, in what's considered the Wimberley Valley or the Texas Hill Country. And it started out, there was no rescues here. There was only a county shelter. So we started with two people, our two founders, and a garage sale to raise some money, and two dogs. So that was 12 years ago. We now, as of last year, I believe, I think we have adopted out about, I think it's about 1,500 dogs now in the last 10 years. And 6 years ago, we actually built a physical location. Prior to that, we were a foster only, so we didn't even have a physical location. We had to board our dogs at another rescue. So we've kind of come a long way since 2009 in our garage sale.
Yeah, that's a really cool origin story. I feel like that's a really interesting one. And what I know, I'm kind of getting a little ahead of myself here, but I wanted to ask, now that you brought it up, what are some things that you guys have done to facilitate that type of growth? Like, are there like one or two things that your organization is really good at?
I think we filled a void, and I think Wimberley Valley is a very tight-knit community. People choose to live here. It's not a destination you end up, in. You want to live here, and we have, for a small community, I think we have 90 nonprofits. So when people are volunteering their time, it's because they choose to live here and they choose to be involved. So getting volunteers initially has never really been a problem because there's so many people willing to help, and the Wimberley community is pretty tight knit. And so they were willing to help us start our rescue and have continued to support our fundraising efforts, which, as you know, is an all nonprofit. We spent 85% of our time making sure we have enough money to pay the vet bills, which are about $95,000 a year. So that's a huge expense for us. And that's vetting about 150 dogs a year with heartworm treatment, surgeries, vaccinations, spay neuter. So, and we've done a lot of community outreach. We offer free spay neuter vouchers. We do a foster to adopt program, which has been very helpful, where you take the dog for 2 weeks. And if it works out with you and your family and the dog, great. And if not, we will take the dog back, even if it's been a year or two after you've adopted a dog from us. And most rescues would never do that. So I think between our community outreach and our willingness to just make sure the dog gets a good home, it's good for you and it's good for them, has really been one of the things we're most proud of.
Yeah, that's really cool that you guys do that. And can you talk a little bit about the dogs that you take in, and how do you find them, and what's that like?
Sure. So we get our dogs basically three ways. One is a found dog. So if we get a call, we have a hotline that is monitored by one person 24/7. If they find a dog in their backyard, if they see a dog, a stray dog on a street, they'll call us. That person, we will go out and try to find that dog. Sometimes people have the dog in the garage. We take that dog immediately to the vet. So that's what we consider a found dog. The other way is people, owners surrender their dogs. We've noticed a lot more of that in the last years during the pandemic. They no longer can afford to take care of the dog. Maybe they've gone back to work full time. They adopted this puppy when they were home for a year. Now they're back at work full time. It's an older community. So sometimes people have to surrender the dogs because they have to go into, say, assisted living. So some are real sad cases, you know, a family dies, they lose their income. So that's called an owner surrender. And we take those as we can. We're not an animal behaviorist, so we can't take a dog that's bitten somebody or a dog that's too sick that we can't afford to either the surgery or to help heal that dog. The third way is, and this really happened during the pandemic when all the county shelters were closed to the public, they would reach out to rescues such as ours. Let's say we have these five dogs, send us pictures, send us profiles, and we would go to the county shelters and pick up those dogs, mostly on the euthanasia list. They were at higher risk, either because they were at heartworm. They were injured, they were older. So we tried to take those dogs in, and then we do spend time with them depending on the situation until they're ready to be adopted. So that's kind of the three ways we get our dogs.
Yeah, and I think that's, it seems like you guys really know, you really know your market and how you can really help. You mentioned, okay, well, we can't help, you know, dogs that are this, this, or this, and that's fine because there are rescues that deal with that. So,
right.
So I think that's great. And how long is a dog with you guys for on average, would you say?
Well, we kind of divide the dogs into littles and bigs. So we have the little dogs inside. We converted a house like about 6 years ago into a rescue. We have 25 outdoor pens. We have about 14 cabanas inside. We have a woman that lives there full time. So I would say the little dogs go much quicker. They're easier to train. They don't usually have as much health issues. And we have an older community here. And so they like what we call the little white fluffy dogs. We get a fair amount of those. The larger dogs, I would say we've had dogs for up to a year, but we stick with them as long as we can. We'll reach out to breed rescues, which has been a new development in the last 5 years. If we get a boxer mix, we might reach out to a boxer rescue anywhere in Texas. So we've delivered dogs to Dallas, Houston. If we've been unable to find a home for them and we feel like it might not be a success, we want to turn those dogs over quickly. A, so we can take more dogs in, and B, so that dog can readjust and have a forever home. So that's kind of, and we never turn dogs away, like I said, unless it's a dog that we just think is a animal behavior issue. We've also used service organizations. We've adopted out a couple dogs to the police force, a couple to Service Dogs Inc., which deals with kids with autism that need kind of a companion, a hearing impaired, a guiding eyes for the blind. So we do reach out and have connections with those organizations if we feel like there's a dog that might fit their bill, and they'll come out and look at all the dogs and usually take one or two. So that's another way that we do that.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting that you guys, I think you're the first rescue I've heard where you could potentially might hit up those like breed specific ones, which I think is a great idea. And yeah. I wish more people would do if they had maybe some dogs that they had some issues adopting out.
And another thing we do that I think a lot don't, you know, some people just want to foster a dog. They don't want to adopt the dog. But if that dog is in that home for any length of time, we learn so much more about that dog, that we provide you know, the crate, all the food, any medical expenses. So, you know, if a dog is, quote, at risk of being there a long time because it's maybe a very large dog or it's a very sick dog, and we're willing to pay the volunteer to foster that dog for their food, et cetera, that just makes that dog so much more adoptable, and it puts that dog in a home sooner than if someone, we were waiting for them to just be adopted.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, that's.
And like, sometimes we have medical fosters. You know, there's only so much we can do. We have a dog that had a torn cruciate, a double surgery, and has to be in a cone, has to have physical therapy. So we'll try to find what we call a medical foster for those dogs.
I was going to say that that's not just the regular run of the mill foster, right? And how do you find a medical foster? Is there like a sheet for that, or where do you do
that?
Well,
we have a foster coordinator, and we will put a plea out on social media. You know, social media has been a great thing for us. Sometimes we get nurses that have some kind of nursing background. We have one of them actually became a foster, and now she's on our board, which because our vet bills and decided when a dog needs to go to a vet, how much medical treatment we can afford, how extensive is the surgery going to be. So we get as much information as we can and try to help them facilitate it. But it's much bigger ask, so to speak, to take a medical a foster in.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. Like anytime animals have those types of issues, it always.
And it could just be heartworm treatment. You know, there's a lot of dogs in the South that have heartworm, totally preventable. And it's so painful for the dog to go through, and they have to be in a quiet area. So if we can get what we call a heartworm treatment positive dog foster, having the dog at the refuge where there's a lot of activity, a lot of noise, a lot going on, they're going to have much more success if they're in a quiet home and getting more one-on-one attention. So we do have those people that step up and have fostered maybe 15 or 20 dogs for the last 10 years for us. So those people are real angels for us.
Yeah, it sounds like your guys' community is really strong. And I think that's awesome that you have that type of relationship. And, growing as fast as you have, I'm sure that there are even more things in the pipelines that you guys are working on. What are some things that are coming up maybe this year or in the future that you see that you're excited about with WAG?
Well, one thing we did last year that filled a huge need is we put a nursery in. So there's a lot of requests from shelters for pregnant moms or just barely newborn puppies, and they cannot keep them in a shelter. So they were at high risk for euthanasia. So we had a fundraiser, and so all the funds were donated, and we had volunteers that actually built the nursery. So we probably housed in the last couple of years probably 10 litters. We just had a litter of 11 dogs. We have 7 puppies have been adopted. We have 4 left. So that filled a huge need that we thought we could provide. And another thing we're in the process of building, and it's almost done, is healing house. So the healing house is exactly what it is. It's for dogs that are undergoing treatment, surgery. We bring them in. It's a soft place for them to land, to get readjusted. If they've been picked up on the street, they don't trust people. They don't know if they're hungry. They don't know if they're going to be taken care of. They don't trust anybody. So we give them a couple of days to kind of decompress. They're not with any of the other dogs. We make sure physically that they're healthy, even if they've been vetted. So we don't spread any diseases, which is a concern a lot with smaller rescues. So now our next step is in this Texas heat and also in the cold, we have to bring them inside for about 4 or 5 hours a day. So our next goal is to build a larger temperature control building where they could be inside in the air conditioning or outside. So our outdoor pens have shade cloths and we have drip system, but when it's 100 outside, you know, we can't leave the bigger dogs outside. So it's a whole new, the summer season has started early this year. And so now we are bringing the dogs in. So once we get a big building like that, that will be wonderful.
Yeah, I think that's so cool that you guys are doing that. And One of the first rescues I've talked to that's, you know, doing something along those lines. I think that's really interesting. I'm excited to see how that pans out. And, you know, obviously growing as fast as you guys have, I'm sure there have been some growing pains along the way. I feel like it's just how it goes. What are some current issues? Like, if you had to boil it down, maybe like one big issue right now, if you could just solve immediately right now and, you know, would it, you know, help out so much, what would you say that would be?
I would say the shelters are at a crisis level, and we get pleas every day. So if we could have a higher capacity, take in more dogs, we'd need a larger building, we'd need more volunteers to help. The expenses would go up medically. And, you know, during the pandemic, everybody kind of switched off. So now we are like actively recruiting our volunteers back. So getting them back up to speed, recruiting new volunteers, expanding. Now we've started our adoption days up again. That's, you know, we're back out in the community again. So I think a lot of those things will happen organically just because we are physically out in the community again, and recruiting more volunteers so that we can, you know, handle more dogs. I mean, 150 dogs doesn't seem like a lot a year, but that's 150 dogs that probably would not be here. So times, you know, 11 years, it's a pretty good number for a relatively small rescue. Usually our max is about 45 or 50 dogs. That's all we can possibly handle. And that's including some puppies and some dogs that are out of foster. We'd like to have 100 dogs. If we could take in 100 dogs, that would be our goal.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think I couldn't agree anymore. So the more dogs you can help, the better, the bigger the reach, the more lives are saved. And where can people find you guys? You know, maybe potentially volunteer, maybe donate, or just help out in any way and reach out. Where can we find you guys at?
Well, we have a great website, and it's WimberleyWagRescue.org. And you click on that, it will tell you a little bit of our mission statement, our story. It will, if you want to donate, if you want to see our dogs, to adopt them, if you're interested in fostering, volunteering, any coming up fundraisers that we have, any adoption days. It's pretty well situated and pretty complete, with profiles of the dogs, pictures of the dogs. And so we always encourage people to bring their dog and other family members out to our refuge. We have, you know, professional dog trainers that assist in what we call the meet and greet of your dog with our dog in a neutral location, which would be at, you know, one of our four playgrounds in the back play areas. So to facilitate that, if it's a good time at the beginning, it usually does work out, but that's kind of where we're at now.
That's really cool. And I'll leave that down in the description below for anyone watching, listening, check it out. It'll be down there for you guys.